it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
Purple Daily is daily Vikings entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.
I will ride with this group.
Seriously, man. Please.
And away we go.
And a happy Thor's Day to all who celebrate. Thor Nystrom, our friend from Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, joins us here. It's kind of the end of the draft season Thor's days. And then we'd love to find a way to keep Thor in the mix for other parts of the year besides draft season. And we're going to work on schedules, but we're going to dive in here before the episode's over. You posted something on Fantasy Pros about the Vikings UDFA class that you really love. And we're going to get to that, but a Justin Jefferson nugget to start the show. Thor, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. It's good to be with you guys. Excited to talk about the UDFAs. Maybe not as excited to talk about this first topic, but it's always good to see you boys.
So is there a downtime? Like, draft is done. Do you go into a cave and like sleep for 5 days or 2 weeks? Or like,
I feel like Thor seems like he hibernates. He just seems like more of a hibernator than a sleeper to me.
Good point.
Phil's correct on this. Yeah. And the hibernation will start after this week. We're still finishing the post-draft stuff. But then after that, yeah, I unplug a little bit for a little while.
So, okay, before we get into a Justin Jefferson update from Alec Lewis, our friend from The Athletic, a shout out to our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. So if you're a business owner out there, and we know that there's a lot of business owners that consume Purple Daily, and we appreciate you guys. Do you have a game plan in place to stay focused on safety, preventing claims? Let the team at Federated support your business. Federated Insurance offers a customizable lineup of industry-specific coverages and risk management services to help you continue your winning streak as a business owner. At Federated, it's our business to protect yours. You can find out more at federatedinsurance.com. So, okay, I'm just going to read you two paragraphs from this Alec Lewis piece. So, Alec casts a bit of a cloud over the Justin Jefferson negotiation. I'm not sure if this was the intention, but I'm just going to read you this and you guys interpret it however you want, okay? So he says, the too long didn't read version of what he has gathered, both with public press conferences and just his connections, is that Minnesota was willing to pay Justin Jefferson top of the market receiver money and near top of the market non-quarterback contract value. But Jefferson's representation sought different figures and or structural preferences. Both parties have levers to pull. The Vikings have the franchise tag if they want to use it after the 2024 season. And Jefferson, who's never been one to cause controversy, is talented enough to dictate his own future and say, move me, trade me somewhere. None of this is fun to type, much less consider. But this messiness is the storm cloud on the horizon. It's a great way to put it, by the way. A football storm cloud on the horizon. So,
while he does a fantastic job, young Alec, come on. This isn't fun to type. This isn't fun to type. You're stirring up a story you know that people are going to read. I know you better than that, Alec. That was fun to type. And it's a good point.
Just throwing a little grenade into the room here.
This isn't fun. I hate to have to do this knowing it's going to get so many clicks.
So, okay, how Thor, does this make you nervous? Like, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being full-on complete panic with the timeline here, 1 being don't worry about it, the ink is basically dry and we just don't know it. Are you nervous at all?
I would put mine at, like, 4. Okay. I'd be lower than most people. I've always had the stance that he should be offered and he should get the highest non-quarterback contract in the NFL. And if they offer that to him and he turns it down, I become much more amenable to listening to phone calls about Justin Jefferson, at which point you would get a king's ransom for him. But I would, you know, again, if that's what's been offered, that's what I would offer. If he's that's what he stated he wanted. If he now is not, you know, going to accept that. And he want, you know, I don't know how much higher you go above that. You set the scale now, my man. That's why I would have tried to do it last season if they were able to, because it just goes up every single year, but it's the same stance. And I put it in his hands. And if he's telling you that, I would be surprised if he's trying to force his way out. But if so, like Alex said, not only do you have the mechanism of the franchise say if you want to do that, I would also listen to phone calls at that point. But I doubt that it's going to get to that point.
I'm at a 5 right now, because not much has changed. We're not at it's in my opinion, we're getting closer to a very important time, but it remains in what essentially I would call a holding pattern. Two things to keep in mind here. One, to go back to, and I believe it's probably true, if you go back to the Florio report a few months ago about the fact this comes down to guarantees and that the only contract the Vikings truly guaranteed was Cousins's, but that the ownership's stance is we don't do that for positions beyond QB. That's an important thing, because I do think the Vikings offer on its face is probably incredibly fair and probably does have Jefferson slated to be the highest non-paid quarterback. But that being said, it's not all guaranteed, which is probably what Justin wants. But I also go back to the last night of the draft, when Kwesi did a conference call or a Zoom call with reporters. Our friend Kevin Seifert, ESPN, the final question was, I think, hey, since we got you, is there an update about JJ? And Kwesi again went to the praising Jefferson, but also I think this time he called him the linchpin, basically not backing off of the extreme importance and building up Jefferson. All of that being said, in my opinion, it hasn't turned ugly. I think it is a negotiation. I think that there are some decisions to be made here, but this feels very much like a business transaction that both sides want to get done, which is why I'm at a 5 and I am not panicking by any means at this point.
I think I'm lower than you guys. I'm like a 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't. Couple things on this. Number one, with the salary cap going up to $255 million. So AJ Brown is currently, with the new contract he signed, he's the highest paid wide receiver, $32 million average annual value. It's an $84 million guarantee, $51 million fully guaranteed. So Jefferson's going to look to eclipse that, but that's only, and I say only because it's still a lot, 13 points. It's like 13% of the salary cap. I think you can, if you're paying a rookie scale contract to JJ McCarthy over the next few years, and you've got Jordan Addison on a rookie scale for the next, well, 3 years, and then the fifth year team option, you've got some really good value at other places. Dallas Turner, rookie scale contract. I like the value they have in some other spots. So I think you can afford to then pay the best wide receiver in the NFL a higher percentage of your cap than you would feel comfortable with. So to me, it all kind of comes down to, does Jefferson, I think the Vikings are going to be at the end of the day willing to make him the highest paid non-quarterback, which would be like the $34 million AAV that Joey Bosa has, right? Or was it Nick Bosa or Joey Bosa? Which one signed the $34 million? I don't know. One of the Bosas.
Nick
Bosa. So I think, you know, once he gets to meet JJ McCarthy and kind of be around him, I don't know that there's a great reason for Jefferson to be demanding out. If the Vikings had not drafted a quarterback of the future and now it's like Sam Darnold and a big shrug, I think maybe he demands for some trade talks here. But the other reason why I think it's going to get done, if you were going to trade Justin Jefferson, Thor, wouldn't you have done it for a first round pick plus other things before this year's draft because of how rich the wide receiver class was? Like, wouldn't you have wanted another first round pick in this year's wide receiver class?
If you were motivated to trade him, and I think the way that news comes out and after the draft, I think your read on this is correct, Phil, that this is just a negotiation, right? That's what happens in negotiation. One side puts an offer out. The other side's like, we need more. We need this or we need that. And you go back and forth. And we're in the back and forth part. They're obviously haggling over, you know, guarantees and other things that seem like they're beyond just the dollar amount. Yeah, you can't give him a fully guaranteed contract, but I think you could do well by him on the guarantees. But look around at the other receiver contracts and make it more analogous to that. But once you give him the fair offer, I do expect the thing to get done for sure.
I also think that this whole QB thing the entire time has been overblown. Like I think Agreed. This comes down to the finances, the guarantees, and look, it's going to be and it should be an intricate contract. But I think that this whole fear mongering about, well, Kirk's gone, what's going to happen? And then, oh my God, I think that has been such a large amount of noise that the public has tried to sift through that the team has never had to concern itself with. So yeah. I really think that at the end of the day, this is a difficult negotiation on a difficult contract. And if he is trying to get it damn near fully guaranteed, you probably, and you did this with Cousins and probably got pushback. You probably don't want to set a precedent. So like, I think that's far more of the issue here than anything to do with who is going to be throwing Justin Jefferson the football.
Yeah. Let me add to that by sort of spinning a question to Thor, JJ McCarthy related. Now, I think they're going to get a deal done with Jefferson and it's just going to be this incredible weapon for a young quarterback, but how much do you think JJ McCarthy projecting ahead 5, 6, 7, 8 years as he becomes like a fully realized version of JJ McCarthy? How much is he going to be dependent on the pieces around him versus a guy that you can kind of just like put anything around him within reason, not necessarily as a rookie, but when he gets a little older, like with Patrick Mahomes, for instance, hey, we got to trade Tyreek Hill because your contract just kicked in. Can you make it work? And Patrick's like, well, it's not ideal, but I'll just go win back-to-back Super Bowls anyway. So yeah, I can make that happen. You know, Tom Brady was a star maker. Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers were star makers. How much do you believe that JJ McCarthy can be a star maker versus a guy that really needs to have the Justin Jeffersons, Jordan Addisons around him?
I think down the line, yeah, you could maybe afford, I don't want, it's hard to say afford to lose the guy that I think is the best non-quarterback in the league. That's why I pay him like that. That's what I feel about Justin Jefferson. He'll obviously help the acclimation of McCarthy. He helped friggin' Nick Mullins throw for more than 400 yards last year.
Correct. Like
Yeah. I mean, he's stupid and he's going to obviously he's steroids to any passing game. But like McCarthy, you know, one thing with him last year, Michigan didn't have a great receiving core, and one of their tight ends in their 12 personnel offense was just a blocker, and the running back they had on the field for 90%+ of the snaps, Blake Corum, wasn't a good receiver. JJ's game, I don't want to say he doesn't need Justin Jefferson, and certainly initially
he does early.
I mean, it's going to so greatly help, and that's when we were talking about any of these quarterbacks going to the Vikings. Why was it the perfect fit? But he was able to win the national title game and be the best on third downs last season, third mediums, third and longs, with a receiving core that was not as good as Bo Nix's or Michael Penix's. So I think down the line, you could project that a little bit better. But yeah, we need Jefferson around here for a couple of years for sure to help out that acclimation process. He's just going to make it a lot easier. And by the way, speaking to this, CBS had their NFL draft guys, including Rick Spielman, was on this panel. They had JJ McCarthy on at the NFL Combine, and they talked to him, and they said, give us your list of NFL receivers that you'd want to throw to. He immediately said the name Justin Jefferson. It was the first name out of his mouth. So you want Justin Jefferson there with him initially, for sure.
Brandon Powell was the second name out of his mouth. Okay, so you go watch the interview. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Johnny exactly. Munt.
I couldn't believe when he said Munt.
That was wild. Yeah.
Hey, Johnny Munn is the third is the best third tight end in the league. Don't forget, KOC said that. So, so at what point in time, like, does this become concerning? Because, like, it's mildly, it's a great talker right now, and I, you know, and we don't know where it's going to go. But does it get concerning when Jefferson, for the second consecutive year, probably doesn't show up at OTAs? Does it get concerning in June? Mandatory minicamp comes, contract not done. He gets fined for not being there. Does it get concerning on day one of training camp? Like, at what point in time?
To me, it's not. Obviously, I would like him to be at as many of the offseason OTAs and minicamps as possible, because you are talking about two new quarterbacks here that you need to build chemistry with. And I don't know, is there a way that would he have J.J. McCarthy and Sam Darnold, or one or the other, come out and do like some private stuff? Because a lot of times quarterbacks and receivers will link up, but then but if you're in the middle of not showing up to the team activities because you have a contract situation, you know, I want those guys to build chemistry. But I would say, like, the true panic point is if we get like 2 weeks into training, I could see training camp being the next real deadline. And if it's like a week or two into training camp and he isn't showing up and he is holding out, or even if he's holding in, and now you have like a real conflict that is weeks or days away from week one in the regular season, that's when panic would set in a little bit more for me, I guess.
Thor, what do you think?
Thor, what about you?
I just don't see it getting there, because, you know, the big thing was that contract that made him the highest non-paid QB. And it seems like that's, you know, what the offer already is, and we're just haggling over details. So again, I'd be very surprised if it gets to that point. Plus, Jefferson doesn't profile as that kind of guy. We've had receivers like that before, that seem more interested in things off the field. I think Justin Jefferson wants his name up on Mount Rushmore of this thing when it's all said and done at the end of the day. I don't think he would put at risk losing any games over a paycheck, especially when it's already satisfied, you know, the one thing. You have months and months and months to iron out some of these details. Would it be like if all of a sudden Justin Jefferson, we've never seen before, emerges and it gets that ugly point? Yeah, that would start to be concerning. But I just don't see it getting to that point, because that's not where I think we are, and it's not what I know of Justin Jefferson. So, yeah,
you know what these parties need to do, folks. They need to all sit down at a local Red Cow and just hammer this thing out. Okay.
Yeah. Or
just
we
go yeah. to your, or we do. Yeah. In fact, we've got a fun, the first episode of Purple Over Beers debuting on Saturday on the Purple Daily YouTube channel and podcast feeds that we recorded at Red Cow in Uptown. Red Cow established in 2013, 6 locations in Minnesota, 5 in the Twin Cities. I tend to frequent the one in the North Loop in Minneapolis. There's one in Rochester. Award-winning double barrel burger. Double patty with white American cheese, grilled onions, and special sauce. Oh,
cheersing burgers. I've never seen that before until that.
Cheersing burgers.
I've never cheersed I've cheersed a beer. I've cheersed a wine. Mm-hmm. On the rare occasion I drink wine, I've never cheersed a burger.
You could also cheers
it's a finger food. You're getting too close there when you're cheersing them.
Yeah. If you're touching fingers, right. Is that weird?
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
Yes, it is.
Because you wouldn't be able to pick up someone. Like, if I'm going to Red Cow, I reach across the table and I touch your patty, we're going to have issues, right? You're going to have issues.
Well, I don't want you near my patty.
You ever each take a bite out of the patty and then do a solidarity where you cheers with the...
Okay.
Don't do that. Okay.
No.
Well, let's just keep it to cheers and the drink.
Cheers the myth. Cheers the 36 beers on tap. Local brews, craft cocktails. You can also belly up to the bar at Red Cow, where there's a line of TVs for you to watch sports. Red Cow in the Twin Cities, 5 locations, 1 in Rochester. Also, a shout out to our friends over at Dennis Kirk. All you Ragnars out there with your braids flowing in the wind on your motorcycles, your ATVs, your dirt bikes, your UTVs. All the top brands at Dennis Kirk. 185,000 parts, apparel, and accessories. They also have a ride finder tool where you can enter your make and model and year and find parts that will fit the ride that you prefer. Same day shipping on orders placed before 8 p.m. Central, and free shipping on orders over $89. DennisKirk.com, folks. DennisKirk.com is here to help you with your riding needs.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Okay, let's put a quarter in Thor here and just turn him loose. So last week, you helped us break down all of the Vikings draft picks, and we went through some of the value there. This is the second year in a row that you really like their UDFA class. You posted an article over at fantasypros.com. They landed, I think the UCLA edge rusher was like the top consensus board guy available as a UDFA. So Thor, tell us why Vikings should be, why Vikings fans should be excited about the undrafted free. Ivan Pace Jr., by the way, was an undrafted free agent. Adam Thielen back in the day was an undrafted free agent. John Randall was an undrafted free agent back in the 90s. I mean, you can find dudes. So what are we looking at here?
Well, first off, you know, like I've been doing these UDFA ranks, I think, for 5 years now. And you know, at first, like, I don't know if there's anyone else that does it out there now. Definitely there wasn't at first. And I sort of had to explain myself about like why I was going that deep as far as rankings go. But I don't think people out there realize that every year, more than 20% of the snaps that are taken in the NFL are taken by undrafted free agents.
Wow, dude, 20%.
It's always between 20 to 25 each and every single season. You just look at the rote snaps taken. The UDFAs give the NFL more value than the sixth and seventh round combines. You'd have to cleave a part of the fifth round in there to get it equivalent. And I just don't think that certainly the general public understands the value of the UDFA process. And as we see every single year, there's some franchises that don't understand the value of the UDFA process. But ironically, or maybe not so much so, the best franchises in the draft process that are typically the teams that are the best franchises on the field, they're typically the ones that invest the most in the UDFAs. Like the Chiefs, who have finished in the top 10 every single year, have done it except for one. Last year were four. This year we're number one. The Eagles are a team that traditionally pumps a lot of that into it. The Spielman era, I railed against the Vikings a couple of times for not having what I felt was the proper investment in sort of the last frontier that you can moneyball football transactions. Adding talent on the super duper cheap is in UDFA. It's, you know, you're shelling out hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not even getting close to a million, and you pull out contributors. You have to do it over the, you know, the entire thing. You're going to have to take 15, you know, 12 to 15. Dart throws. Not every single one of them is going to hit, but the ones that do, the ROI you're getting on those are huge. So it's a very important part of the process. I wanted to set it up that way to say last year was a deviation from what I had seen from the Vikings in the years before that. They clearly got after it right after the draft. Ivan Pace was my number one UDFA available. That was pre-draft of last year. I'm not talking, obviously right now it's pretty easy to love Ivan Pace, but he was the top guy on my board. Andre Carter was in the top 10. They pulled those two guys, and then they got Najee Thompson. Obviously, they're very valuable special teams ace. This year, their class qualitatively is on par with that one. So I think you're going to see – I'm not going to say you're going to get an Ivan Pace. That was pretty special to pull a rookie starter out of UDFA. But I think in the aggregate, the amount – we could definitely get three guys out of this crop that make the team. The Vikings finished number three in my rankings this year. For UDFAs behind the Chiefs and the Jets.
Interesting. So, yeah, go ahead, Jed.
Oh, so it's been a long-held theory, Thor, and I think it's probably right, too, that if you know how to work this, and part of it takes a commitment from the front office and ownership on finances, too.
Yes.
Because, like you said, it's not super expensive, but there are some teams that don't want to spend. I've never thought the Wilfs were stingy there. But yeah, Spielman, I felt like there was a time that Spielman put a premium on the UDFA classes, and then it sort of waned a bit. But
yep.
I think the key thing here, too, is if you're going to be a sixth or especially a seventh round pick, you would almost prefer not to be drafted, because if you're going to sign as an undrafted free agent, you're going to have, first of all, a choice to go to a targeted team. If it's a sixth round or seventh round pick, you're just being picked by a team that might like you but doesn't have a plan as much. So I actually think that this is an untapped fertile ground of being able to target guys much more so, and vice versa, which allows you to sign with a team in, for instance, Ivan Pace's case, where he says, hold on a second here. I just looked at your depth chart. This is a pretty good place. Where if he's drafted, it could have been by a team for special teams. So like there is a, this is a really, really interesting conversation about getting to a place where you have a chance to thrive because you didn't get picked.
That's part of it for sure. That you get to control your own destiny at that point. And then the other thing is the very top guys, every single year we see this, a bidding war breaks out for them. And so the top guys that don't go drafted, they always get more than all the seventh rounders in guarantee money. And a lot of times they're getting, you know, I'm talking the very, very top, they'll get more than the sixth rounders got as well. So not only is it in their best interest, some when they get pushed, you know, whether you're talking about going in the late seventh or being UDFA, if you're that guy who is right on that cut line, every single time I would if I was the agent, I would rather have my guy go undrafted, because now I get into the bidding war and now I have all the depth charts laid out in front of me. I can put him in, you know, into the best. You're weighing those two things. How much money are you getting right up front? And then the situation, where can I place him where we have the best shot at getting onto the week one roster? And both those things are of analogous weight, because you want the guaranteed stuff right away. But then also, obviously, if you make the week one roster, then you're making the real money. So, because again, these signing bonuses are fairly lower. The amount of the guarantee that they put onto a year one salary, typically that's how they tip off to you that they intend to keep that guy on the roster. Andre Carter being an example of this last year, when you have a significant amount of guarantee money in that year one salary. But yeah, I totally agree with you, Jared. Plus you hit free agency earlier than some of the guys drafted higher. So like we saw that with, remember when Lael Collins got pushed out of the draft? And then he was UDFA. That was for things outside of his control. We won't get into that, but he ended up, you know, signing the shorter term contract and then was able to get paid earlier, trying to offset some of the money he lost by getting pushed out of the draft.
Yeah. So let's get into some of the names specifically. Let's start with the UCLA edge rusher, and then give us like three or four of your favorite names that could make an impact with the Vikings here as UDFAs.
Yeah, so Murphy was definitely the top one. Gabriel Murphy was 144th on my board, 6'2", 247, 92nd percentile athlete. So he's a really good athlete, and he's an awesome pass rusher. And this is, of course, why Brian Flores and that defensive scheme were interested in him. Last three seasons, so the first of these three seasons, he was at North Texas, where he started out with his twin brother, who ended up signing with the Dolphins, I believe, in the UDFA process. But that was the last season. Then these last two seasons were at UCLA when they transferred up to take team with Leatu Latu to give UCLA the most ridiculous pass rush like in the nation. Even though Chip Kelly's offenses had fallen off, their defense got nasty. But over those three seasons, Gabriel Murphy, PFF pass rushing grades those seasons, 90.4, 87.0, 87.6 those three seasons. That came over 921 pass rushing snaps. He had 18 sacks in that sample size. Just last season at UCLA, playing a really good schedule, 8 sacks, 16 tackles for loss, 61 pressures. Now, I have to say about Murphy, he's a one-trick pony. It's just off the edge, attacking the quarterback downhill or getting involved in the run concept. But most of the utility is getting after the quarterback. He only had 29 snaps over the last 2 years in coverage, where UCLA dropped him into coverage, but he's got real talent getting off the edge. In particular, the one cool part of his game is he has a really good first step, like off the line. And this is in particular because he's one of those guys that judges the snap. He's trying to time it up so that he gets the quickest jump possible. Sometimes that happened where he timed it up, you know, right that millisecond, and the tackle didn't even have a shot to touch him.
So he commits about 6 offsides penalties a game, but he'll get you 2 sacks.
He had a couple. He definitely had a couple. And, you know, and there's a theory of people that don't like him that part of his game, which is really cool to watch when it works out, that he was doing maybe that to mitigate some of the lack of length. But even so, on the entire sample, it's not a fluke when you go over 3 years in the FBS and the G5, then up to the P5 the last 2 years, and you put up those kind of numbers. The kid knows what he's doing. The only reason he didn't get drafted is because he's got super short arms. So it, okay. It's that lack of length and
he's the Burger King guy.
He's a T-Rex.
Exactly. He's a T-Rex. But yeah, with the way that they're going to use him, you're going to use him situationally. You're not going to drop him back into coverage. Whenever he's on the field, it's going to be coming downhill. I think he profiles really well for that situational edge rushing, pass rushing role out of the edge.
Football. Mm.
Can we stretch his arms out?
I think he would have done it if he could have before
there's
the
some
draft.
Type of machine that the Vikings can get where he just goes around like just, this or yeah,
hanging
like
from just hanging from the rafters.
Honestly, I'm not mad about it. You know, it's like if Ivan Pace was 2 inches taller and 25 pounds heavier, Vikings wouldn't have had any chance of getting him for what they got last year. And then with Murphy, if his arms were another inch and a half, he would have gone in the middle rounds. So
see, that's fascinating to me. Like, and obviously these measurables, we've got years and years of data that suggests that, hey, there are certain benchmarks that you probably need to hit in order to be an NFL player. But like everything you just said about him, and of course, my lingering question the whole time was, well, why did he not get drafted in the sixth or seventh round? And it's because of short arms. Is there really, I mean, it's obviously you look at some of the best pass rushers in the league and they've got these go-go gadget robot arms that can just get right into an offensive tackle's chest and push him back. I mean, is that nuance, like an inch and a half in arm length, like, is that the difference between this dude's not an NFL player and this dude gets drafted in the fifth round? I mean, are we talking about that razor thin type of thing?
In this case, yes. Yeah. Okay. I mean, and he maybe would have needed 2 more inches on those arms, but one way or the other, yeah, he would have been a middle round pick if that's what he had. And for people out there, because, you know, people out there, they might think that this is silly. And some organizations, I would agree, take it a bit too far. The Jacksonville Jaguars are on the very top of that list. It's the explicit reason why they took Trayvon Walker, number one overall, over Aiden Hutchinson, because Hutchinson fell beneath their arm length threshold at that position. But the reason why NFL teams do this, I mean, it's one of two, it's two things. On the analytical side, it's over the entire data set, you tend to see that some of the guys with the longer arms, that projects better when it's going to the next level.
That's why Marcus Davenport's still in the NFL, right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, and why some of these, when you look in the guys that weren't as good as in college, they're going above where you thought that they were going to go on draft day. Typically, it's the guys with the longer arms at this position. And so, you know, a part of it's the analytics. The guys with the shorter arms have not had as much success in the NFL. There are exceptions, of course, but, you know, in the aggregate. And the other thing of it is just the way the coaches would see it is the guy who has the more length is going to be able to touch the other guy first. You essentially get to dictate the terms of the dance. It's the same reason why at the beginning of UFC fights, they show the length and the reach in boxing matches, because that guy is going to get to, you know, he gets to reach across. The other guy's going to have to get closer in order to touch him. And you know, different manifestation, of course, but this is why it's important in that sport. And in this one, again, like the thing of keeping the other guy off of you, Murphy, to be able to touch the other dude, he's got to get into his pads, at which point he's a little bit undersized. And so that's where the projection gets a little wonky for coaches, where they're like, he's always going to have to win by beating him to the outside shoulder. He can time some stuff up. And certainly in the Pac-12 and when he was at North Texas, he was awesome at that, because there's guys that lack foot speed there. But in the NFL, they're going to have the reach on them. They're going to have the quicker kick step out first and be able to shuffle with them right away. We'll just run you around the arc at that point. That's what people are thinking about when they're poking holes in his profile, when they're in the war room and they're in advance of that. But either way, it's the same thing they did with friggin' Ivan Pace. There's some guys who are so good on the college field, are so good at one thing. You just have to bring them in at that point, especially when it's essentially free, like this transaction was.
Dictate the terms of the dance might be my new favorite term.
I mean, true, man.
I love that term.
Yeah. Okay, give us some other two or three other names. Let's keep going through some names here that you like in the UDFA class.
Yeah, so Murphy
educate
was,
us.
Murphy was the top one. That I had three other guys the Vikings got that I had draftable grades on prior to the draft. The next one on my list was Dwight McLaughlin, the cornerback from Arkansas. 6'2" cornerback, long. He can press. Also had four years starting experience in the SEC, started at LSU, was recruited there, I believe, by Ed Orgeron at the end there, started his first couple years there. Then he went to Arkansas and continued to start. So he has all this experience on the highest level. Plus, last season, it was his true breakout season, 92-point-something PFF grade overall, 92-point-something PFF coverage grade as well. until he got a turf toe injury in November that wrecked his season. I believe that he gets drafted if that didn't happen. He does the thing that he's going to have to overcome. He has the length and the you know, when you take out the tape measure that Gabriel Murphy doesn't, but the athleticism is the issue with him. Was only 45th percentile athlete and lacked some of the foot speed. But in a system where you just keep him in zone, or else you when you're blitzing the more guys and they do the aggressive thing of getting up on the line and then trying to jar him off to screw up the timing, you're going to get to the quarterback really quick. So you just want to mug the receivers off the line. Those are the two things this kid can do for sure. I don't think the athleticism, like those are the things that he's good at. What you don't want is him trying to trail a guy that runs in the 4.3s down the field with his back to the quarterback. And that's a scenario where he's going to get singed when it's 4 seconds after the snap. One other thing I'd say about that kid, ball skills, 23 passes defended and 7 interceptions in the 22 games after he transferred to Arkansas. So the last 22 games of his career, his game really jumped. And again, a guy that LSU identified, put into the starting lineup immediately, and then broke out at the end of his career and would have kept doing that, you know, and I think it would have been more noticeable as far as his draft equity had he not gotten that turf toe injury.
Interesting. Okay. How much, before we get to a couple more names, it feels like cornerback is a long shot for a UDFA to go from a UDFA cornerback, because it's such a premium position, and even edge rusher, I mean, the two guys we're talking about here. Do you have any sort of information or data on, of all the UDFAs in the NFL year after year, like which positions produce actual like NFL caliber starters and rotation players from the UDFA pool? Like it would seem that cornerback is a long shot, but guards might have a chance to, you know, to get in there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that this summer. Maybe look into the buy positions.
I gave Thor homework that he didn't ask for right there. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, you see examples at every position. I mean, you're not wrong about that, but we've seen, who is the dude from the Eagles? The Eagles pulled a corner and, Reed Blankenship was a safety before that. I'm blanking on the name, but they pulled a kid out of Alabama that was playing right away at cornerback. And you see this, you know, every year at different positions. Obviously, the Vikings got lucky with Thielen years ago, and we've seen them excel at different ones. It's some of the profiles of the guys, you can understand why NFL evaluators, when they're in a war room, these types of guys start losing tiebreakers to other guys, because the NFL guys have seen guys with the other dimensions, the more prototypical dimensions. They've worked with them. They know that works. You know, it's like sort of stick with that. Some of these guys that we're talking about that reach UDFA, even though they were really, really good in college, their projection is tainted or put in doubt by one of these different things. Mm-hmm. Smart coaching staff, smart organizations, they're able to take advantage of that. And by the way, the one other thing I'd say is the testing data, it's not the be-all, end-all with this stuff. In fact, the Rams out there, the Rams do the draft process different than everyone else. They love it when kids test poorly during the pre-draft process, because they don't factor the testing in whatsoever. It's why they didn't go to the combine last year. I don't know if they sent how many guys they sent this year, but what they care about, it's their study of the tape in conjunction with the GPS on field athletic data that they get from that GPS. The acceleration, the deceleration, you know, the stuff in and out, we stop, come back, that, you know, as far as the receivers go. And then the high-end speed that you can hit on that GPS, that's the stuff that they're sorting by. It's not the testing data. And the Vikings have made pretty good calculated choices as far as when they got aggressive these last 2 years with some of those guys who are really good college players who just lacked a couple of these measurables.
Interesting stuff. Who's next, Thor?
So, you know, we hit the top two guys. The next two guys on my board, the last two that had draftable grades, they play the same position. And I would put out there to people, one of these two guys is making, first of all, Gabriel Murphy's definitely making the team. McLaughlin, we'll have to see, because it's a crowded room, but he's certainly got a shot. But one of these next two guys is 1,000% making the team. I think that they have a battle royale set up against each other to make the week one roster. That's Bo Richter from Air Force, who was an edge rusher last year, but I project him to up a linebacker or something. He played earlier in his career, and I think that's what the Vikings are seeing him as. And then Dallas Gant, the up a linebacker from Toledo. And they're kind of interesting evaluations when compared against one another, in that Bo Richter, he earlier on in his career, like I said, was the off-ball guy. He ended up moving up to edge because Air Force just didn't have any talent there. and Richter had shown so much talent for the coming forward thing, just charging downhill. And last season, he was one of the most disruptive defenders in all of the G5. This is Richter coming off the edge last year. He had,
draft. I'm pretty sure we did take Bo Richter in the later rounds of one of our simulations with you, like during our mock simulation.
I'm sure we did.
He definitely came up a couple times.
And I'm guessing, you know, that he also had a late draftable grade on the Vikings board. I don't know if they've, you know, said that publicly, but as far as the stats for Bo Richter last year, you know, I told you he went ballistic with Air Force, 19 and a half tackles for loss, 10 sacks. And only two edge rushers in the country ended up posting a higher pass rush win rate. But now he's got to go back to off ball. He could do that in the Mountain West coming downhill, but again, lacks the length, lacks the dimensions. He's 6 foot, 6'1", but 248 pounds, but a 99th percentile athlete. So that's what the Air Force was throwing at people off of the edge. The other thing is, now it's a smaller sample size with him, but with Murphy, you have to throw out any idea that he's going to be able to do stuff. Like, you could not drop Murphy back in coverage at the NFL level, or you're going to be in trouble. I think that there's reasons to believe that Richter could handle this in his off-ball assignment, the coverage. In his short, the smaller sample size he had at Air Force, 182 snaps in coverage. And he did okay at that. Last year, he only had 58 in the coverage where they dropped him back because he was so good coming downhill. But he had an 86.8 PFF grade in coverage on those. The work earlier in the career, he got most of it that first year when he was active, 2021, at outball linebacker, and was solid in coverage that season too. So with that athletic profile, I think you can project that better, especially in a system where it's asking him to do zone and dropping and stuff like that. But the thing of attacking is what he is really, really good at. Last year, 92.2 PFF pass rush grade on Bo Richter. You got the versatility. You can bring him onto the edge situationally if Flores wants when they're sending all the guys on the blitz. So I think that's what Richter offers you. Also has some special teams utility. The guy who has more of that is Dallas Gant. He plugged a lot of those holes at Toledo, was at Ohio State earlier in his career, a high-level recruit, couldn't get on the field initially. Goes to Toledo and was awesome. 115 tackles or more over each of the last two seasons and was first team all conference. There was questions about him both with the size package and then the level where he dominated. The MAC has been so far down the last couple of years. But keep in mind, he had that shine on him as a recruit, had a really good high school career. And the Ohio State thing, not getting on the field there initially, you can't begrudge him that. It was full of NFL defenders. But his size profile, 6'2 and a half, 228. 63rd percentile athlete. But Dallas Gant, he's like a really good special teams player. So I think you put Gant ahead of Richter as far as the special team stuff. You put Richter ahead of Gant as far as the overall skill set that you can flesh out, where it's more flashy, you get more of the flash plays. Gant might be more of your prototypical off-ball linebacker, but that's going to be a very interesting battle to watch because one of those two guys is making this roster.
Thor, what's your Andre Carter expectation now, because he was obviously a big time get along with Pace, didn't get to play as much, and I think was a disappointment. But I also think that there was a thought process that he could potentially break out far more this coming season. So what's your expectation there?
Yeah, the year one for me with Carter was always a wash. The fact that they kept him on the roster and they delineated that thing to him, that shows how much that they believe in him, because year one was always the year you weren't going to get value. The problem with Carter's evaluation, or I shouldn't say but the reason he didn't get drafted is because he stunk against the run, right? He was like this tall oak of an edge rusher and had like the enormous first step, could get on you. He had all the length that you would want, and he put up those enormous pass rushing stats and the pressure rates and everything like that at Army. But he was on the skinnier side and totally lacked play strength. It was clearly more comfortable coming forward, descending with that quick first step, with his Inspector Gadget arms, getting his hands on the offensive tackle, and then being able to dictate it however he wanted, whether steal the outside shoulder, whether counter back inside. Oh. He was more comfortable with that than when the offensive lineman now is coming forward, and Andre Carter, he meets him with the Inspector Gadget arms, but then he would immediately, the guy would just crash through the gates, and all of a sudden he's got a Mr. Carter on a conveyor belt backwards, because he just couldn't anchor. The technique of it was wonky. He didn't have sand in his pants, as scouts would say. He had to get in the weight room for 1 year and then also work on the technique as far as sticking your legs in the ground and becoming a stump and sort of, you know, setting the edge, as we say.
Yeah, dude. Becoming a stump and getting sand in your pants.
Feed it to me. Oh, September can't get here soon enough.
Oh, yeah. Football.
Amazing, man. Amazing.
I think that Carter is going to get there. You know, like keep developing him. Now he's had that full year. He had to get out of the Army's training regimen. Yeah, and you guys know all about that, but people out there need to keep that in mind. That's why he couldn't keep on all the weight. So he needed the year in the NFL system to do that.
Yeah, it's funny because like the Vikings went from having one viable edge rusher really the entire season last year to having like two for sure with Grenard and Andrew Van Ginkel that have proven it in the NFL. And then like this, maybe the best edge rusher, depending on your big board in the draft in the first round in Dallas Turner. And then the best undrafted free agent edge rusher over here, maybe from last year, the best undrafted free agent edge rusher. They just have a really interesting room of edge rushers after losing Danielle Hunter to free agency. So go ahead. Final thoughts from you.
Yeah. Final thoughts was the reason in addition to everything I said before, that I'm bullish and especially, or I should say encourage, as far as Kwesi and the crew, their investment into UDFA. You know, we talk about some of those trades that they made where they gave up the mid to late round picks to move up to guarantee JJ when they move up with Turner. A couple of those came from next year. They traded the other one to second round pick from next year to even get that first rounder in the first place to have a chance at that Dallas Turner thing on draft day. And so, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this stuff of like they're a little bit, heading into next year, they have less picks. They kept their first rounder, the important thing. But things like this about grabbing guys where they should have, Ivan Pace, should have probably, especially in hindsight, in the moment, I thought he should have been a fourth rounder. In hindsight, he should have gone even higher than that. But you steal that for free out of there. Yep. And then these other guys, you're getting free value out of that. The last thing I wanted to say, Phil, I had a couple other metrics I put out on this stuff. I mentioned the Vikings got third in the UDFA rankings that I do. I gave them an A in my draft grades. I'm the hardest ranker out there. The Vikings don't get any extra credit for me. As people who could go back in my history and take a look, I probably in the aggregate, I've given the Vikings the lowest grades of anyone out there. Look at the last 5 years. So you get an A in my metrics. It means I believe you had one of the best five processes as far as that goes. I also take the amount of talent that you get in the draft, you know, by my charting against the, and then add it to the amount of talent that you got in UDFA by my charting, my point values, and then divide it against the draft equity that you spent to do it for what becomes my last column of the draft season every year. I call it a hall ranking, you know, basically a holistic thing where you're looking at the entire draft process. How much total talent did you pull and how much did you have to pay for that in terms of draft equity? And the Vikings in that this year finished number five. When you're looking at the entire process, the amount of talent they got against the draft equity that they had to spend for it.
Wow.
So I just thought it was really good by Kwesi and the crew. Both they did the UDFA thing again, but this was just in terms of the draft process itself. Kwesi's first draft, he struggled. We can all agree on that. The second draft was better, you know, but it was still like we headed into this draft and it was like, which way could this go? And we're going to need a grand slam draft and we got one out of him. And I think that not only is it encouraging in the short term, as far as the roster and thinking about the team, I think it's pretty encouraging when you just think about Kwesi and that administration having gotten better in their three draft classes so far as pretending for the future.
Yeah. And then just two quick piggybacks off that, this narrative that they gave up, you know, they gave up the equivalent of like an extra first round pick or whatever it was to get up in the two trades they made to get up to get Dallas Turner. And or just like, oh, all the mid round picks that they gave up. If you look at the draft value charts, well, two things off that. Number one, if they had Dallas Turner and JJ McCarthy as two of the best players on their board, which is entirely possible, by the way, they may have had JJ McCarthy as like the third best quarterback on their board, most important position. And they may have had Dallas Turner as the best defensive player on their board within Brian Flores' system. And those guys are both eighth and ninth on the consensus big boards. Then moving up to get the eighth and ninth best players with the 17th pick and with the 10th pick is good value. And also in 5 years, if they landed a franchise stud quarterback and a franchise stud edge rusher, you're not going to be talking about, well, the fourth and third round picks that they could have had, right? You just nailed two cornerstone players on rookie scale contracts that are going to carry your franchise for the next half decade.
1,000%. And some people need to keep in mind, and people will know I'm not being disingenuous about this, who listen to our shows together, because I talked about sort of the front end of this, but I love the trade charts. I created my own trade chart, and that's how I make all these metrics that I was just mentioning, like where do teams rank? It just has to do with that pre-draft. Like I'm not, you know, sort of ballparking this stuff, but that's the Kelly Blue Book in theory on this stuff. It takes everything else out of the vacuum of context. What specific class are we in? Is the top of the first round juice more? When does it start to fall off? Whereas maybe another draft class, it's deeper. So some of those later ones would be worth more. But the other thing that people that just talk about the trade chart the next day, they're failing to take into consideration is, again, that's a theoretical value for a slot, a starting point when you talk to the other general manager. But the Vikings on their board, assuredly, they had both McCarthy and Turner above. They might have had them top five. Both those guys are top five, top six, top seven. So when you're doing the math on the Dallas Turner thing, Kwesi's obviously a big analytic guy. The trade he made with Houston initially, that one jived. If you look at all the trade charts together, it was more or less even, you know, in terms of that. And it allowed them to have a little bit of leverage to tell teams, well, if, you know, you're not going to trade with us, you're not going to let us have your third pick, then we'll just use our other picks. We'll use one on a quarterback. It gave him a little bit of leverage with that. But it also was at a fair price point. Then the Jacksonville one, yes, that was a quote unquote overpay by the charts, but that's not the math Kwesi was doing in the moment. The math was the number eight player, the number seven player, the number six player, number five player, wherever they had Turner on the board, which was in the top 10. It's just how high was it? That is the thing that they're trading for. They're not trading for the 17th slot anymore. They're trading for Dallas Turner, who is ranked sixth on their board. So when they're running the math, that's why it appears to be an overpay on the other side. Now, they have to be correct in that evaluation in the long run for that to make sense. You know, Phil, you were mentioning when you add up all the equity of those two trades combined, what was it? I seen someone ran it on one of the charts. It was like the equivalent of like the seventh pick or the eighth pick. And this person was expressing shock. Like, how could you make those trades and add up all that stuff? And it's like, because Dallas Turner was ranked that there or higher on the Vikings board. That's why this is an analytics guy who is running the math. He's just running different numbers than the simple
then Bobbin and then Bob in his basement blogging up a storm. Huh?
And technically, couldn't you redo the actual trade chart for each draft depending on position and talent?
I think they do. Yeah, I think they do because they have their own board and they know where the quality drops off.
Right. But I mean, and some drafts suck.
A fifth round pick is more valuable next year, right? With because it's a deeper class with like the COVID years all converging. So there's going to be more talent in the fourth and fifth round next year. Well, of course, they gave up some of those picks, but like the context matters.
Like the first round, like the 17th pick, some years could be a great pick and some years.
Yeah. And they know they're going to have two extra first round picks when they trade Justin Jefferson.
So here's what we need. We need you to become the first guy to every single year come to us with a new trade value chart based on the depth of or non-depth of said draft, Thorsky.
Okay. Sure.
And then when the nerds start to like pontificate, be like, oh, no, you don't understand the actual value.
This is the Thorsky 5000 chart. Okay. And
exactly right.
It involves more context.
Oh, you said 622 points. Oh, contraire, 350 points.
Yeah. According to the Thorsky 5000 chart.
I guarantee you, no one in the Vikings, they weren't talking about it's not that trade chart at that point. You know, like I said, it's when if you can come out of that day with.
Makes perfect sense.
Turner is ranked X, you know, it's like fifth, sixth on your board. And you have McCarthy, you know, I agree with you guys. I think he was their third quarterback on their board. And so like you have those two guys and then what they ended up giving up for them in their slots for them, it was a value bonanza. Now, again, their reads on these guys have to be correct at the end of the day. But as far as the transactions, that's what's going on there. And I think, you know, however, if people out there want to quibble with that specific thing that moves to get Turner, fair enough. I was lower on Turner. It's not like I'm trying to carry water for them, but I'm trying to say the people that are just doing the trade chart thing the next day trying to be like, oh, I'm the one who's bringing context. They're just removing context on the other side to bring this other context that they prefer to talk about in that moment. That's not the math being run by that by the teams. And the Vikings overall in this draft process killed it in both the selections that they made, the reading the room, the calling the bluff of the Giants, striking when the defenders were falling down the board. You go out and get the one that you think is the best in the class. You keep your first round pick next year, which could be a monster asset depending on how things play out. And then you destroyed the UDFA process again. After last year, you brought in three.
Screw the Broncos too,
including a rookie starter. Yeah, and Sean
Payton.
Screw
Sean Payton. Sean Payton was Sunday.
He was so in the tank that after the thing, he's at the press conference trying to claim that he's this double agent because he wanted to sand over the tracks of him calling up trying to trade up for JJ McCarthy, which, by the way, is confirmed. They confirmed that he was calling the Bears and teams. That's not a supposition. This is the express thing that Sean Payton at that press conference was trying to get ahead of, to be like, oh, you know, that was just me being sneaky, Sean. It's like, Sean, no one was taking Bo Nix ahead of you. And by the way, you tell me when a team was taking them behind you. I understand why you're getting out here trying to get ahead of this narrative.
Should have traded back. Yeah. Should have traded back, Sean. Yeah. Clown.
Destroy him. Yeah. No, destroy him, Thorsky.
Yeah. Do that gold chance.
And do that new trade chart.
I'll do that new trade
chart. March 1st, 2025, Thorsky 5000 trade chart. You think you got the digits? I got the digits for you.
Yeah. For next year, boys. Next year.
Love it.
Love it, man. Thor Nystrom, Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. Great stuff, dude. That brings us to the end of the draft season, Thor's days, but I'm sure you will see Thor and hear Thor on a Purple Daily podcast sometime in the near future. But we'll let you get to some hibernating here for a little bit, and we'll stay in touch with you. Thank you so much for just the amazing coverage from a national and Vikings perspective. You're one of our favorites here. We know the audience loves you, so thank you, Thor.
Feeling is mutual on both accounts. Appreciate you guys, and it was a blast talking the draft with you this year.
All right, brother.
Love
there
it,
he is.
Thank you.
Thor Nystrom here, Purple Daily, where we just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.